Welcome to For the Health of It, starring Dr. Jennifer Kretzinger, wellness chiropractor. She has a health pet peeve. She says if you lose weight, buy smaller clothes. Walking around in clothes three sizes too big doesn't celebrate all you've worked for. Jessica Labby, our co-host, says she has a health pet peeve about people thinking that just because something is labeled organic, that it's good for you. Mike Clark, our producer, wishes there weren't labels on food so he wouldn't have to feel bad about what he eats. All in all, this is one interesting bunch. They will inspire you to eat, move, sleep, think, and live better. You're listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it.
Hello, everyone. We are doing a special broadcast today. This is a remote broadcast happening at Spinal Corrective Center in Amherst, New Hampshire.
They made me move the whole studio to the back room here.
It's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, it's fun.
We had patients in here yesterday wondering why all those microphones and equipment was here. And the reason we have a special situation today is we have one of the most exciting guests I've ever had on. Her name is Barbara Lowe Fisher, and she is a co-founder of the National Vaccine Information Center. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you for having me.
For those of you who don't know what the NVIC is, it's a nonprofit educational organization that was actually founded back in 1982. With Barbara Lowe Fisher and parents of vaccine-injured children. And their goal was to develop a strategy for and to lead a national grassroots movement of public information to help people understand more about informed consent and vaccine safety. And this has been an incredible resource for me and for patients around the country. So I thank you for the incredible work that you've done, Barbara.
Oh, thank you so much.
Back in early 80s, what prompted you to want to create this incredible movement?
Well, I joined with parents here in the Washington, D.C. area after I saw the documentary, which actually was an Emmy Award-winning documentary, DPT Vaccine Roulette, the first news report in this country to alert parents to the fact that their children could be brain injured by vaccines. In this case, it was the DPT vaccine. And as I watched that program, I realized what had happened to my son, who had a neurological reaction, a convulsion, collapse shock, and state of unconsciousness after his fourth DPT at 2.5.
Wow.
And my family and I, we had taken him to many, many doctors. Nobody could figure out what was wrong with him. My family and I knew something had changed drastically after he was vaccinated. But, you know, back then we didn't have any information at all about vaccine risks. It just wasn't out there. It was available to the medical doctors in the medical literature, but it was not available to parents. That's, of course, a very different situation today. After 30 years of work, it's now pretty well known by the American public that vaccines do carry risks. But it was watching that show, I contacted the station, was put in touch with other parents, and I started to do a 2.5-year research into the pertussis vaccine, the whooping cough vaccine, as part of DPT, because that was what had injured my son. And he was left with minimal brain damage, multiple learning disabilities, and attention deficit disorder, had to be in a self-contained classroom with a learning disabled throughout public school. It was that experience which really made me commit myself to trying to educate the public about the fact that we need to have much higher standards for proof of safety and effectiveness of vaccines. I went on to co-author DPT, A Shot in the Dark, with Dr. Harris Coulter in 1985, and worked with Congress on the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which was the first time that this society acknowledged vaccines can cause injury and death. And there's been more than $2 billion that has been given to families whose children have been injured by vaccines. So it's no longer a quietly well-kept secret that vaccines can, for some individuals, result in catastrophic health problems and even death.
You know, about 15 years ago, I read your book, A Shot in the Dark, and right around that time, I had the opportunity to hear you speak. I think it was at a Dynamic Essentials seminar. And since then, I'm looking at your biography, just in the last 15 years, you've been on the Today Show multiple times, often doing live debates. You've been on CNBC, NBC, CBS, the Today Show, Good Morning America, Fox News. You have become the consumer advocate for the public. And I find it interesting that this is a hot topic. This is being talked about and it's very being openly communicated. And I think that's important. And the most common thing that I've noticed with when I work with my patients is they'll say to me, is it true I have a choice?
Well, the answer is yes and no to that question, unfortunately.
Right.
As more information has become available to the public about vaccine risks, and people have started to seriously question whether the government recommended 69 doses of 16 vaccines from 12 hours of age through to the through 18 years of age is a wise public health strategy for our children. As those questions are asked and parents are starting to object in doctors' offices to the numbers of vaccines children are getting and the fact that a lot of kids are sick, chronically ill, not healthier, but chronically ill, and there's no answers being given to the parents from public health officials or doctors as to why that should be true if they're getting all these vaccines and they're doing everything they're being told to do by pediatricians. You know, why are so many kids so sick? As that happens, there's more pressure placed on by the schools who have the requirements for vaccination for children to go to school. It's become just a very contentious issue. Parents are rebelling against being forced by government to give their children so many vaccines. I mean, triple the numbers of doses of vaccines that my children got in the 70s and 80s when they were going to school.
Right.
So it's the laws are becoming more oppressive as the people are becoming more educated, and there is a great anxiety among families who want to make choices about vaccines, who may want to use, you know, a few of the vaccines or may want to use all of them but on a different schedule, and they're being thrown out of pediatricians' offices for asking questions or wanting to have an alternative schedule or wanting to use fewer vaccines. And some people do not want to use any vaccines at all. They want to approach health in a different way, in a more holistic way. They don't believe that all the vaccines are necessary. They may believe that their children are at higher risk than others for having vaccine reactions. And so our organization has been very, very vocal about the fact that we need the right to informed consent in this country, informed consent to vaccination, which means, like any other medical procedure that carries a risk of injury or death, or a pharmaceutical product, that all pharmaceutical products carry a risk of injury or death that can be greater for some than others, and that's true for vaccines too. We have been very, very strongly supportive of the right of all Americans, adults, or whether you're a parent of a child, to be able to make informed, voluntary decisions about the use of vaccines. And that means, in legal terms, that we're working for instituting conscientious belief exemption or philosophical exemption in every state. Right now, only 18 states have the right to a conscientious belief or philosophical belief exemption. We want to protect the religious exemption. All but two states have religious exemption. We believe it's a fundamental right in America to be able to follow your spiritual beliefs. And if those beliefs conflict with a health policy that requires you to risk your life or the life of your child for a pharmaceutical product like a vaccine, we believe this is inappropriate. We've got to protect the right, the religious freedom, as well as being able to obey our conscience, in effect, by having a conscientious belief exemption. The medical exemption exists in 50 states. However, the medical exemption is extremely hard to come by now in America. You have to have that exemption written by a medical doctor, an MD, or a doctor of osteopathy, a DO, both of which are licensed to perform surgery and also to prescribe drugs. And so a doctor of chiropractic or a naturopathic physician, they cannot give an exemption to vaccination. we think that's wrong as well. However, the medical exemption, because there is oversight by these public health agencies, whenever an MD gives a medical exemption now, they're second-guessed by the public health department. They're often harassed. Yeah. And so a lot of doctors don't want to give medical exemptions. In addition, the American Academy of Pediatrics is putting pressure on doctors to give no medical exemptions and to throw parents who ask questions about vaccine safety out of their offices and deny them care. So it's become a very contentious issue.
I agree, Barbara, that people need to get involved and stand up for their rights. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have more from Barbara Lowe Fisher, and I would like to tell you what happened in college in my immunology class.
You're listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it. Your host is Dr. Jennifer Kretzinger, wellness chiropractor at Spinal Corrective Center in Amherst, New Hampshire. For more information about Dr. Jennifer or this podcast, check out spinalcorrectivecenter.com. If you would like to schedule a health checkup with Dr. Jennifer, call 603-673-5600 and mention this podcast to receive a special offer. That's 603-673-5600. To find a wellness chiropractor in your area, go to chiropractic.org/doctorfinder. Now, back to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it.
The medical exemption is very interesting because I remember in chiropractic college, they asked for a raise of hands of which students were children of medical doctors. And, you know, there was actually about a dozen hands raised. And then they said, out of you 12, how many of you were not vaccinated? And it was like 8 or 9 of them were not vaccinated. And I even find that with our patients, they'll go to their medical doctor and they'll ask them, they'll be, you know, quite coerced to vaccinate. And then I've had a few cases where a patient will ask their medical doctor, did you vaccinate your children? And they'll say no, with a smile on their face, as if I can't tell you to not do this, but almost like they have a pressure to do it as well. I find that interesting.
Well, that's right. I mean, it is a well-kept secret that some doctors don't vaccinate their children, yet they take a very strong stand in their offices about families vaccinating. And, you know, there's another aspect of this, and that's the HMOs. HMOs in the last 15 years have been sort of denying doctors the right to participate in an HMO if they don't have a very high vaccination rate among their patients. It's become a quality standard. And so, you know, if you the HMOs want the companies and the corporations to use them, to sign up with them, and if one of the quality standards for assessing the effectiveness of an HMO is that you have your participating physicians having a very high vaccination rate in their practice, you've got a problem, because it means that a physician who gives fewer vaccines or who wants to allow their patients the right to informed consent, they're penalized and they're thrown out of the HMO.
Wow. Well, that's incredible. And I'd like to talk for a moment about the religious exemption, because we do have that here in New Hampshire. We also have been working to get the conscientious belief exemption. It has not passed in the House yet. But in New Hampshire, the religious exemption, you can sign it in front of a notary public. You do not need a medical doctor, but you do not need to prove any type of organized religion. You're just basically saying your own personal spiritual beliefs. I know in some states you actually have to have a written form from an organized church that you belong to. I think in Iowa it might be that way, but I know in New Hampshire you don't need to. So in some aspects, it almost functions like a belief exemption.
Well, it's really unconstitutional for the state to require you to belong to a government-sanctioned religion or recognized religion. Whenever there is that kind of restrictive language in a state, if it's challenged at the high court level in the state, in the state Supreme Court, it's usually struck down. If it's in Iowa, then it simply hasn't been challenged. It was challenged in New York by actually a chiropractor, Alan Scheer, in the 1990s, challenged the wording of the religious exemption in New York, which required you to belong to a recognized church that has a tenet opposing vaccination, and was struck down. What the New York State Supreme Court said was that you only need to have deeply held sincere spiritual beliefs, that you don't have to belong to an organized religion or a church that has a tenet opposing vaccination. This is a correct interpretation of the Constitution. It is equal protection under the law. The law should not require you to belong to a state-sanctioned religion. So I hope, I know that in New Hampshire you have been fighting for a long time, and I certainly hope that eventually enough legislators become educated that you can get that exemption passed.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, we know other people who choose not to vaccinate because it's been shown that a lot of vaccinations have human cells from aborted fetal tissue. And if you're pro-life, people just on that principle alone oftentimes will choose not to vaccinate.
Yes, that's true. I know that these companies are moving away from into new technologies, and those new technologies, I write a commentary for the NVIC Vaccine E-News. Hope everybody will sign up for that. It's a free, it's free. But today's commentary is about the FDA trying to propose a rule change that will allow one employee at the FDA to grant the drug company's request to change vaccine ingredients, such as adjuvants and the amount of residual protein in vaccines and the preservatives in vaccines. And one of the things we've been discussing at MVIC recently is this issue of contamination of vaccines when you use animal
yes.
cell substrates, like the Rotatec vaccine. Merck's Rotatec vaccine is contaminated with a DNA from a lethal pig virus that causes wasting disease and death in baby pigs, and yet we're putting this vaccine that has DNA from this lethal pig virus into babies, newborn babies. It's a live virus vaccine. I mean, there's so many issues that people don't really understand about vaccines and their potential risks. And so it's a challenge. It's all about education. And it's always important for people to be informed consumers of any kind of medical product. Certainly, it's true for vaccines.
When I think more and more people who are more conscious of what they put in their bodies through food, you know, are surprised when they find out that there's, you know, monosodium glutamate, there's polysorbate 80, there's contaminants that we avoid purposely in genetically modified yeast, that's in the vaccination that we actually inject into the bloodstream, which is a more direct route. There's formaldehyde, mercury that's still in the flu vaccination.
And, that's right. And the aluminum the FDA, I'm just shocked that the FDA would want to give that power over to one employee at the FDA. Of course, that's very convenient because then they don't have to go through the Vaccine Advisory Committee public oversight process. They don't have to take public comment. It's, there's just too cozy of a relationship between the pharmaceutical industry and the federal regulators. And this is true, this sort of cooperation or partnering between industries like the oil industry and the federal government. And we see what that partnering has brought us this summer with the oil, just flooding the beaches in several of our states. But I think a lot it's because we don't have proper regulation of these big industries. And that certainly is true now with the pharmaceutical industry and the federal agencies. We just need to put a firewall in between the pharmaceutical companies who are making profits, big profits, off of these vaccines that are mandated to be used by everyone in this country. And the Congress, as of 1986, gave the companies liability protection. So when vaccines harm children or adults, then you cannot go to the courts to sue a company for that injury. You have to go through the federal compensation system. And even though $2 billion has been given out to families whose children have suffered vaccine reactions, there 3 out of 4 victims are turned away because the government doesn't want to acknowledge that vaccines are harming as many people as they are. So they put up a big defense and try to reject many of the claims, these vaccine injury claims. So there's a lot to learn, a lot to keep updated on, and I hope people will come to our website at mvic.org and sign up for our newsletter and stay informed so that when we put out action alerts, something happening in a state or federally, people can choose to take action.
I want to make sure we touch on one more thing. You mentioned in a recent article that you wrote in Pathways magazine, which is a fabulous publication, and I really appreciated your article. You said that the number of doses of government-mandated vaccines have tripled in the past quarter century, while the numbers of chronically ill and disabled children have also tripled. And there, you know, there's a lot of concern and controversy that's gone out about the association with vaccination and autism and with attention deficit disorder. Can you just briefly speak on what is out there that's valid that shows a connection?
Well, there has always been the ability of vaccines to cause inflammation of the brain. The most feared consequence of vaccination, starting with smallpox vaccine, the first vaccine, through the pertussis vaccine, the whooping cough vaccine, DPT, and the other vaccines that have come on the market, is inflammation of the brain that can cause catastrophic brain damage, a variety of brain damage. For my child, he had a mild brain inflammation that resulted in minimal brain damage, took the form of learning disabilities and attention deficit disorder. Other people will have a more pronounced brain inflammation, a more severe brain inflammation that can result in more catastrophic brain dysfunction, such as autism, mental retardation, seizure disorders that cannot be controlled with medication. Vaccines atypically manipulate the immune system. And if somebody is predisposed to already having a hyper response to inflammation, such as families who have a history of autoimmunity or severe allergy, that kind of thing, you can have a vaccine that will produce a very pronounced inflammatory response that never is resolved, goes on to be chronic inflammation that takes various forms of immune system and brain dysfunction. That's really what autism is. Autism is brain and immune system dysfunction. Now, not all children who are autistic became autistic from vaccination, but what we don't know is how many children have developed chronic brain and immune system dysfunction that takes the form of autism from vaccination. It's true. We have more than tripled the numbers of doses of vaccines that we give our children in the last quarter century. In that same time period, we have seen a doubling and tripling of the numbers of children who are chronically ill and disabled in this country. We have an epidemic of chronic disease and disability. 1 in 6 child in America now has learning disabilities. 1 in 9 has asthma. 1 in 100 develops autism. 1 in 450 becomes diabetic. This has never been the case in this country. This is we're going on to the second generation that are highly vaccinated who are chronically ill and disabled. It's an unacceptable number of children who are chronically ill. And so we need to ask the federal health authorities, why is this true? If we're using all these vaccines that are supposed to make us so healthy and result in long-term good health for our society, why do we have so many chronically ill and disabled people, children and adults, who are suffering from brain and immune system disorders, which is just causing an amazing amount of money to be spent on health care? Our health care system is broken in part because so many people are sick.
Well, we certainly see that in our office. I want to encourage our listeners to go to the NVIC.org website, because there are 8 questions that you should ask before giving your child an immunization. And it's a great way to clarify if you're ready to make that choice, because I think that what we're learning here is that we do have a choice, and we have to take responsibility either way. We have to take an informed responsibility to understand what to look for with a vaccine reaction. And also, if we choose to not vaccinate, we have a responsibility of properly caring for our children.
That's so true. If you're not going to vaccinate, the whole point is to stay healthy. And there are many ways to do that. And for those who choose not to vaccinate, they really need to be involved. Choose a doctor who is, in my view, who is holistically health-oriented and who is looking at non-invasive, non-toxic ways to stay healthy. I mean, America is spending billions of dollars to eat organic. They're spending money on belonging to gyms and exercising, eating healthier, just reducing stress. We intuitively in this country know that there's something wrong with the way we're living, the way we're eating, and what we're putting into our bodies. And so I have great hope that this revolution, if you will, in health, in the way we see health, is going to persuade more people to move away from solely depending upon pharmaceutical products, including drugs and vaccines, to stay healthy. It's that should be the exception. The exception should be the use of pharmaceutical products. The rule should be trying to stay healthy in a more natural way. And that's why I've always been very supportive of chiropractic, because I see it as a discipline in healthcare that is really oriented to the holistic healthcare paradigm. And so I thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed our interview.
Well, we salute you. Jessica and Mike and I are just sitting here smiling
thank
at each
you,
other
Barbara.
Because you so support the messages that we're trying to get out. So again, I just want to appreciate the unrelenting work that you have done in helping parents make better decisions. Your work is appreciated 10 times over.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, everyone, I hope that you will check out the NVIC.org website before making any permanent choices for your child.
Oh, and if you're on Facebook, make sure you search National Vaccine Information Center and like them.
What does that mean, like them?
Oh, you're not on Facebook, are you?
No.
It used to be that you could become a fan of certain things, but they did away with that, so now you have to like them instead.
And while you're at it, you can like Spinal Corrective Center, and you can get updates from our office and when new exciting podcasts come out. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Excellent. Be well, everybody.
You've been listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it. For more information, go to SpinalCorrectiveCenter.com or call Dr. Jennifer at 603-673-5600. That's SpinalCorrectiveCenter.com or call 603-673-5600.